Welcome, beloved listeners, to the Little Wireless program. They say frogs are disappearing, but I seem to have one in my throat, so I hope my guest will be particularly loquacious. What's happening? We'll be discussing the waning prospects for an Australian republic, and we'll also be looking at the Gallipoli landing through a different prism. As you know, it was all about poor planning, wrong beaches, British generals sending Australian troops to certain death. Well, what if that simply wasn't the case? That'll be postulated by one of my guests, and then I'll be talking for the third time on the program to my old friend Howard Goldenberg, doctor, writer, marathon runner, now novelist. Howard was also a Moyle who was into, you know, ritual circumcision. And as a special offer to our listeners, he's going to give a freebie. Now, what other program offers you that? But before we start, I have been remiss in not thanking Macquarie University. They were very sweet to me last week. They gave this dilapidated broadcaster an on-doc, and it was a lovely ceremony, sitting up there on stage watching hundreds of young students getting their degrees, which they'd worked so hard for, and then getting a freebie all to myself. Very touching, because the nearest I ever got to university was going past Melbourne's on the Swanston Street tram. That's what happens when you leave school at 15. And, of course, this program is absolutely and utterly dependent on people with degrees. You know, we must have interviewed, well, thousands of professors and emeritus professors from every university on the planet. Where would we be without them? Case in point, my first guest, George Williams, Anthony Mason Professor and Director of the Gilbert and Tobin Centre of Public Law, takes a deep breath to finish it, at the University of New South Wales. Now, what George is going to do is tell us the sad news, why the Republic is in such trouble. Robert Menzies once said that winning a referendum is one of the labours of Hercules, and winning another on the Republic will be an uphill battle for Australia's elected representatives. A Fairfax Nielsen survey has found that the monarchy is back in favour, particularly with the young. Only 28% of 18 to 24-year-olds support a republic, the first generation in decades that are more supportive of the royals than their parents. Now, it seems that the celebrity factor of Prince George and his parents are only one part of it. So here we go, a bloke with a very royal name, George Williams. Welcome back to our little program.
Thanks very much, Philip.
I'm in a state of deep shock and depression here, George. Tony Abbott reintroduces dames and knights, young Australians more supportive of the royals, preferring the status quo to republic. If this is true, and I accept that it is, why? What the hell is going on?
Well, it's certainly a bad year for the Republic, and it really confounds the expectations of Republicans that things would get better over time, that they do have time on their side, that as new generations come through, they'll be increasing the Republican, but of course it hasn't worked out that way. And what people have tended to say is they do think it's that royal celebrity factor, the Kate and William visit, and it gets extraordinary media attention, not just at the moment, during the visit, but at other times as well. And I think the initial reaction is that that's telling. But I personally don't think that's the real reason. We've always had that issue with the Republican movement, that they've got to combat the fact that it may be the Queen who's popular or someone else. And I think what's happening here is that the people who normally champion the Republic have simply stopped doing so. And we haven't really had a national conversation about the Republic now for about 15 years. And a whole generation of new voters has emerged, and those people have no exposure to the debates of the 90s, or really why it's worthwhile making this change.
You will vividly recall Kevin Rudd's gathering of the clans in Canberra, where we were to speculate on future trends in Australian society. And at that event, one got the feeling that Rudd was about to do something. He seemed to teeter on the edge, but then he withdrew.
Well, he was a bit of a tease, you'd have to say, when it came to republicanism, but he was on a number of things. And on that, yes, there was that great 2020 summit, and I was there, right, as others were as well, and it was a great talk fest where things like the Republic were discussed. And yes, there was a sense, and I in fact was involved in the National Committee of the Australian Republican Movement at the time, and We thought that a major announcement was going to be made soon after, and we'd been given some indications that that might happen, that the debate would start again, that the government would champion the cause. But instead, of course, Kevin Rudd took a step backwards, said he wouldn't do anything during that first term, which he himself didn't survive, and we had Julia Gillard, who instead did everything she could to put it off the agenda by saying that rather than progressing the Republic issue, she didn't think anything should happen until the Queen died.
And Malcolm Turnbull has been, well, quite quiet.
He has. Look, I personally think you can forgive Malcolm a bit for this. I think he did his dash in 99. He, of course, not only gave enormous amounts of his own energy and leadership, but financially as well. He made a major contribution. And I think it is appropriate that other people step up to the plate. You need new generations of leaders within Parliament who are going to push this issue. And I'm sure Malcolm doesn't want to see himself defined by this issue as he very easily could be. So he has been quiet. He has, though, agreed with Labor when they're in power that we should wait until when the Queen dies on the basis that things would get better, that it would be easier to convince Australians to make the change. But I think these statistics and showing that younger people are turning to the monarchy in enormous numbers really puts paid to the idea that it's going to be easier the longer we wait.
You write in the Sydney Morning Herald that it was a revealing insight into modern Labor's discomfort with, quote, symbolic nation-building changes of the kind once promoted by leaders such as Paul Keating. No one stepped up to the plate in the way that Paul did.
No, they haven't, and it's been a long time between drinks to actually find a Labor leader who's been prepared to do that. And it did look like Kevin Rudd might be that person, and of course you've got to give Labor credit for the apology to the stolen generations, but that was really the high point, and it came very early for these sort of nation-building events. And after that point, that the government actively sought to distance itself from these type of changes, wanting to emphasise perhaps what was coming out of focus groups about employment and other things, which are, of course, of great importance to the success of governments. But I think Labor just hasn't been prepared to push these type of agendas now for many years. And if Labor doesn't, well, there really isn't a major party that will. You will find Liberals who are strongly supportive of the Republic, and many there are champions of the Republic. But if Labor itself, with its larger numbers of Republicans, isn't prepared to really push the issue and show leadership, then you can't expect the community to be interested and actually engaged and likely themselves to see this as anything but a hypothetical issue.
Let's look at referenda. Prime Ministers find referenda difficult, and you argue that you need a different kind of leadership for referendums.
Well, you certainly do, and I've looked at all of the referendums. I've had 44 of them, and our book I wrote studied what went wrong and what very rarely has gone right. And of those 44, only 8 have ever got up, none since 1977. So it's now 37 years since we've had any referendum success in Australia. And if there's one key reason why referendums fail, it's because of political mismanagement. And what's really stunning about the record is the capacity of leader after leader to make exactly the same sorts of mistakes. It's not a very diverse record of failure. It's a very common one where the community is taken for granted. There's not bipartisanship, all sorts of basic errors. And what tends to happen is that leaders approach it just like another electoral exercise, trying to get a victory over the opposition without realising that unless you've got the opposition on side, you're doomed to failure. And here Labor in particular has tended to get it wrong. It's put 25 of the 44 referendums. Only one has ever got up under Ben Chifley in 1946, so 24 out of 25 have failed. And if you look at the ones where Labor got bipartisan support, it was for that single success. The other 24 they didn't, and yet they've continued to put referendums without learning that lesson.
There's another issue which for some of us is equal in importance to the Republic, and that may lead to a referendum next year, and that involves recognising Aboriginal people in the Constitution. What do you reckon?
Look, I think it's got the best prospects of any proposal at the moment, and the fact that it has a very strong political champion in Tony Abbott gives it an enormous advantage, because if you do have a Conservative leader and Conservative Australia on side, then certainly your chances are much higher, because the odds are Labor will support it, so it gives you a bipartisan base. I think there's a good chance we will have a referendum next year, because there's parliamentary committees and all sorts of processes at the moment working away to come up with a proposal. And personally, I think it's long overdue. Not many people realise not only that Aboriginal people aren't even mentioned in our constitution. It's as if this continent has a history that began at 1788, but we've still got clauses in the document that are based upon old white Australia policy notions. So we've got a clause, for example, that recognises the states can still stop people voting because of their race, or another clause that was put there to enable the federal parliament to make laws that discriminate against people on the basis of their race. And our first prime minister said that was needed to pass laws for the coloured and inferior races within Australia. Now, the problem is that's just not history. It's actually still in the constitution, and it frankly should have been taken out many decades ago.
I would remind you that recently Marlon Brando, sorry, George Brando, said we were fully entitled to be bigots. And I would suggest to you, and this is based on the barrage of stuff that I get on almost a daily basis, that bigotry is probably better organised thanks to the, you know, new social media than it's ever been. And that's going to be a consideration or a considerable factor in this battle, no matter how hard Tony Abbott fights.
I think that's right. I think the history of Australia for these, what you might call progressive nation-building causes, is quite poor compared to many other nations. And when I've looked at that, it's often been because the opponents have been well organised, often in very basic grassroots politicking, whereas people who believe in things like bills of rights and the like often find themselves thinking that people will be convinced much more easily than they are likely to be, and that they don't sometimes play the basic grassroots strategic games you need to play. And I think the politics is very hard for these things. Gough Whitlam said the road of the reformer is hard in Australia, and I think things like republics, bills of rights, and yes, Indigenous recognition shows just how organised and politically savvy you've got to have a chance of getting up.
George, you'll get my vote. Thanks for that. George Williams, Professor at Law, University of New South Wales. Coming up next, Gallipoli, separating fact from fiction.